Well, so far you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man, Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
It's time this morning for Deal or No Deal.
I signed for them after the Euros, and after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking,
regretting it.
What have I done? Like, I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it? Nathan Murphy and Phil Egan are with us. Phil, are you ready for more football? Football.
I certainly am. I haven't stopped. I was watching Shamrock Rovers last night, and geez, they nearly did it. We've got Bohemians at the Aviva tomorrow, so football never stops.
Football really never stops. I was thinking more of the incessant gossip around transfers and the soap opera of the Premier League.
Absolutely.
You're talking real grassroots football. That's real. That's a good thing. This, the stuff that we're talking about is whether or not Rafael Varane is worth 20 million or 80 million, 50 million.
Maybe we'll reach in the middle, but 50 million. But yeah, certainly whoever signs him has got themselves a good defender. Yeah, and there's a bit of panic, obviously, when the transfer market starts moving a bit. Obviously, it was pretty much on hold during the Euros. But now what happens is you see a rival club go to sign someone and you start to freak out, going, why aren't we doing anything? What's going on? They're signing two players. We haven't even got anyone. We're going for loan players. We got to get our shit together before this season starts. So it's, the next few weeks, things are going to pick up big time.
Yeah. Nathan, what kind of transfer market do you expect this year? Is the money going to be as ridiculous as it has been? Are people going to start mortgaging future income on the basis that crowds are coming back, but we're not quite sure? What do you expect?
Well, the Premier League seems to somehow be bulletproof that everything that has gone on in the world over the last 18 months. Reading about the French League, with the exception of Paris Saint-Germain, it seems there's going to be a mass exodus, even at Lille, who just won the title, that they're going to have to sell a big part of their squad, and that all those young emerging players in that French League are going to be on the move. We know the situation at Barcelona, where they may not even be able to afford to re-sign Messi, and we see the speculation today around the likes of Antoine Griezmann. Are they going to sell Coutinho? Is pretty much everybody, with the exception of Pedri, up for sale? Likewise at Real Madrid. So I think the Premier League is going to be the main driver once again. And if we see one or two of those Kane, Mbappe, Haaland moves, we'll easily be looking at $1 billion again from the Premier League alone. And they probably right now, like the vultures, can just swoop in and take advantage of everybody who has been properly affected in a normal financial way by the pandemic over the last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the grim parts of capitalism is that we, by virtue of the accident of where we were born, are going to get to enjoy most of the fruits of the collapsing football economies in some of the other countries, because, as you said, the Premier League has managed to do similar TV rights deals for the next time, so the guaranteed income is right there. Let's start with Manchester United, who obviously feel the need to spend a bit more, maybe because of the unrest amongst their fans in particular. We've talked briefly about Varane there, but that is a real thing. Varane has apparently very close to agreeing personal terms. That's what happens. The personal terms don't seem to be too difficult to agree, particularly when Manchester United are as generous as they are. It's the fee at the moment. Phil, in terms of what Manchester United need, is Varane a significant upgrade on whoever it is Harry Maguire's partner over the course of the last couple of years?
Oh yeah, big time, absolutely. And look, a lot of people have knocked Harry Maguire over the last few seasons, and you know, I think obviously that big price tag that came with him when he left Leicester to join Manchester United added to the pressure. But he's had a really good European Championship. Now, what I would say with that is, when you've got a defensive setup the way England played, it certainly is an easier team to play in, rather than if you're camped in the opposition half and you're on the halfway line and you're playing a high line and the ball is played over the top. That didn't happen with England, because that's just not the way they played. But yeah, obviously Lindelof is seen as the weaker of the two. So if you get somebody like Varane in, Lindelof is certainly, he had a decent enough Euros as well, but he's certainly a player that could be handy enough to have in the squad to play certain games when you've got a busy fixture schedule. So Maguire and Varane certainly is an upgrade there, and I think United have to be looking at a central midfielder. We know Sancho is going to be done as well. If United got Varane over the line, and they signed a really good central midfielder, obviously, and with Sancho, then, yeah, that's a big improvement from last season.
Yeah, close enough to being a title-winning team, Nathan?
Potentially. Like, I think Varane is a transformative signing in that maybe they don't need that central midfielder if they sign Raphael Varane, because the problem they've had is that they've defended so deep because they had no pace at the back in Lindelof and Maguire that they felt they needed two midfielders to protect what was in front. Whereas with Varane, you can suddenly push up to the halfway line. I watched France, Switzerland, and like you start noticing how brilliant Pogba was, and you're wondering how is he so effective. And I'm watching Kante and thinking, well, Kante is obviously just there as a holding midfielder, but Kante wasn't a holding midfielder; he was everywhere, and they were able to do that because the French defenders, I think they had three at the back that night, were all inside the opposition half because they knew they had the pace generally to get back. And that's been one of the big issues for United, is they can't press up the way other teams can because they get caught in behind, which means they need two defensive midfielders. So maybe with Varane and his pace, even at 28, maybe they can push right up and get away with playing one holding player. Maybe we're playing just Scott McTominay and getting all that attacking talent on the pitch together. So I think it's an incredibly exciting signing for Manchester United, albeit maybe a couple of years after they would have liked to get him. Does it make them title contenders? United haven't been in a title race. I know they finished second, but they weren't at any stage last season in a title race where they had that enormous pressure in March, April, May of this is a game we have to win. This is a game, even against mid-table, that we need to show that title-winning mentality. So do they have the manager? That's what this is going to do. I think the loss in the Europa League final and this money that's been spent on Varane, on Sancho, means that the pressure on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be pretty seismic for the opening 10-15 games, and he has got to be ready for it, and they need to start quickly.
So is it, are we taking this as like a sign of hope, Nathan, that Manchester United can pin their hopes on that France performance where they ended up crashing out of the Euros to Switzerland?
Is a very fair point.
Maybe this is like a really exciting, a more exciting Manchester United team over the course of the next season, and like they become everybody's neutral side. Like, is a higher line automatically, as you say, just better for Pogba and better for the neutral viewer of the Premier League?
Well, I think all the best teams play a very high line because all the best teams now are brilliant attacking forces. There's very few strong defensively minded teams that are having huge success. The other problem is what they do. Right now, if they sign Varane, I would almost make a striker more of a priority than a central midfielder. I'm still not sure how they're going to work in an attacking sense. Maybe Rashford's injury and been out until October means it's straightforward that they'll play Pogba on the left-hand side, they'll play Sancho on the right, and you rotate between Cavani and Greenwood. You're still putting an enormous amount of pressure on Mason Greenwood, who scored, one league goal in the first three quarters of last season. Very young, brilliantly talented. Maybe he's ready. Maybe he does take the step up. And also Edinson Cavani, who, despite his unbelievable movement, is he going to score you enough goals? There's questions about Bruno Fernandes, fitness and form. Isn't three-week, four-week break enough for him to get back? Perhaps it all is. If all that clicks in, there's no question they'll be Titan contenders. But I think there's still just a few question marks about the manager and about whether they've got the right parts in an attacking sense as well.
Okay, that Rashford news obviously is that he's having the shoulder surgery that he is electing to have. They're saying that it wouldn't be entirely necessary because the condition wasn't degenerative, but he feels that his movement hasn't been good enough and the pain-killing injections wasn't something that he wanted to continue with long-term. So October seems to be the realistic time frame. Obviously, Manchester United have a long history of telling us that players are out for a long time and then they come back 4 to 6 weeks in advance of that. So we'll wait and see exactly how long he's out for. Do you expect Manchester United to sign anybody else, Phil? Or is the two big signings enough? And actually some of those younger players who they've signed kind of slightly off-Broadway over the last couple of years coming through?
Yeah, I think they need to sign a central midfielder because I think if they sign somebody like a Wilfred Ndidi, then that's your one holding midfielder. You don't have to play McTominay and Fred. You play somebody that can play that role on his own and has obviously done it in the Premier League. And I wonder, with Samari going to Leicester, does that mean that they're bracing themselves for a big bid for Ndidi? And Samari, by the way, looks like a really shrewd bit of business from Leicester, who have obviously brought in Daka as well. They do this. But I think the French market is where you go, where you can get real value. And obviously Samari was part of that Lille league-winning team. So
He's
a holding midfielder. He's definitely a player that they've signed for just over 20 million euro. And you could see him maybe in a few years being valued at 50 or 60 million. Just again, just the way Leicester do business is so good.
Okay, let's move on because Erling Haaland. Chelsea have been warned they're facing Mission Impossible as they're preparing a monster bid for Haaland. Essentially, we believe that there is a release clause which will be triggered next summer, around about 70 million. So what the big clubs are saying to Dortmund is, we'll pay you twice now what you're going to get next year, and you need to decide, is the bird in the hand literally worth two in the bush? It's very difficult to know what to do if you're in Dortmund's situation. They've obviously just cashed in on the Sancho investment that they made, which obviously is huge for them, and they don't really need the money. But at the same time, are they going to win the Champions League? Are they going to win the Bundesliga this year? That's what they must be looking at. So on the traditional deal or no deal, 0 to 10 scale here, Phil, what's the possibility that Haaland isn't playing for Dortmund at the end of this transfer window?
Ooh, I think he is going to be playing for Dortmund. So do I have to go low?
That's a 10 out of 10. You think he's going to be playing for Dortmund?
We'll maybe say 9 out of 10. We won't make it a dead cert. But I think I'd be very surprised if they sold Sancho and Haaland in the same window. And also as well, next season, next summer, I know you mentioned the release clause, but if they've got a load of clubs coming after them, does that really matter? Because it becomes a bidding war, surely.
I don't know. I think that if you know the price is the price and the price is fixed, you ultimately Haaland gets the pick. I don't know. The nuances of that are going to be very interesting to see if they play out. Nathan, what's your take on this?
Again, in the current financial climate, it's very hard to turn down 150 million, knowing, as you said, what we think is that you're only going to get 75 million in 12 months' time. But Erling Haaland, it seems to be a once in a generation player, and maybe you have him right now and he wins you that Bundesliga title. And what is that worth to the club? Maybe he can win you a Champions League title and all that that is worth. So Borussia Dortmund have a massive decision to make. Like, wherever he goes, you're almost automatically making that team favourites to win the title. Like, if he goes to Chelsea, it's incredibly exciting what we could see next season with Chelsea competing up against Manchester City, Liverpool and Manchester United. He's certainly enjoying it, Haaland. You get the sense he's loving the attention that is there at the moment. Chelsea, it seems, are the favourites, with Manchester City focused on Kane. Unless Manchester United are for once doing their business quietly in the background and are working away on something, it does seem as though Chelsea are the only option. But even that is going to cause a bit of upheaval at Chelsea. Like, they're talking about having to get rid of Hudson-Odoi, of Ziyech, of having to sell 3-4 players to be able to bring him in, which may not make it a straightforward swap, but he's just been so good. It's hard to see how he doesn't score 25 Premier League goals next season if he arrives at Chelsea.
Would they swap Timo Werner in some cash room, maybe? Would that increase the price at this stage?
These swap deals never actually seem to happen, do they? They are the perfect paper talk of, yes, we're going to hand over 3 players in return for this guy. It's very Football Manager. In reality, it rarely seems to happen. But maybe if you bring him in, you can sell Timo Werner back to one of the clubs in Germany for 40 million and you're happy out.
I don't know if anybody's going to spend any money on Timo Werner just until he recovers some form, and maybe they need to loan him out to do that. Okay, so where would you like to see him? I mean, both of you, obviously. I need you to park your club allegiances as a pretend neutral. Where would you most like to see Erling Haaland play football?
I don't want to see him at Manchester City. I think Kane, Haaland, Mbappe, any of them ending up at Manchester City is going to make life very difficult for everybody else. So if he ends up at Chelsea, Chelsea will be a force and we should get a good title race next season.
Okay.
Is it too greedy to suggest that we could do better than a two-horse race? Nathan, I guess we're talking about the Champions League winners here. Even without him, are we not already saying that it's going to be a two-horse race? Or I'm getting sounds here that maybe you're not putting them in that bracket already.
Where do all the goals come from? Unless Timo Werner, you know, suddenly transforms and starts taking his chances. He does feel he's in that Morata sort of space of the head drops quite quickly. The confidence levels may never get to where you want to be for a real top-level striker. So like, City are just so strong. They were so comfortable last season. We've seen pretty dramatic turnarounds season on season in recent years. So there's no reason why we couldn't have a brilliant title race, and that Chelsea aren't prime for that. But I think Haaland unquestionably just means it's guaranteed that they're going to be in a title race.
Okay. The Daily Express this morning reporting that Antoine Griezmann could join Chelsea on a season-long loan. He's also been linked with a move back to Atletico as cash-strapped Barcelona try and reduce their wage bill and somehow find the money to pay Messi. How exciting is the prospect of the 30-year-old French star playing in the Premier League, Phil, in between 1 and 10? How likely is this to actually happen?
Doesn't get me too excited, but it mightn't be the worst option for Chelsea to maybe get a player in of that quality on loan for a season while they're biding their time for the Haaland deal to get done. I look at him and I think he's not out-and-out striker. He's going to drop off, and I kind of see Havertz is the solution there. I expect a really big season from Havertz. Obviously, you know, he came into a new league during a pandemic, got COVID, but he showed glimpses. Obviously, he scores the winning goal in the Champions League final, but he showed glimpses last season of how good he can be. So I don't think Griezmann is somebody that Chelsea need to be going after. What other teams in the Premier League do you see him playing for? Is he good enough for the very top, those teams that we're talking about being in the title race? Would he get into the Manchester City team? Would Pep Guardiola find a place for him? I'm not so sure.
Would he get into the United team?
He'd be good another option.
Yeah.
Another option who would rotate between several different positions. We are probably going to see quite a few of these sort of signings where you can get the player in either on loan or on the cheap on massive wages. And as we get closer to the end of the window, teams will take that risk. You know, again, 2018, Antoine Griezmann is coming to the Premier League. You're incredibly excited to see what he can do. But two seasons at Barcelona, he's played 100 games. He's got just over 30 goals. It's not what he was. He's 30 at this stage. So yeah, Chelsea's going to be fascinating with what happens because they've so many attacking options. Giroud is obviously on the verge of leaving to go to AC Milan. I think Pulisic is brilliant every time he plays, but seems to struggle to keep fit. Hudson-Odoi was very exciting, but Tuchel doesn't seem to completely trust him at this stage. So who they bring in and what their attacking lineup is going to be key for the season. And Phil's dead right. Like, Havertz has just got better and better and better. And like, if you're a month out from the start of the season looking at a potential player of the year bet, I haven't seen odds, but Kai Havertz will be on a lot of people's list for that.
Okay, let's move on. Harry Kane, the situation with Harry Kane, I don't know, I think Owen, you were making the case, you were wondering if it made it more likely that he would stay at Spurs if he had just won the Euros. I thought it was good logic, good sound logic, that like he was getting to scratch the itch of winning the trophy and still be the king of Spurs and take them into the new stadium and all that kind of stuff, and there's an easy case to make there. Now they obviously didn't win that, and he looks further and further away from winning trophies. So does that make it more likely that he's going to force the deal through, Phil? He seems to be quite a stubborn character, badly advised signing that massive long contract as opposed to the massive contract with Spurs. So is he going to get better advice and force the move?
Yeah, well, I wonder, as he was doing his lap around Wembley through the night, applauding the fans yet again without the prospect of going up to get a winner's medal, did he think, I'm just done with this. I'm just fed up and lose. I want to be a winner. I want to go somewhere where I can win trophies. So he knows if he goes to Manchester City, he's guaranteed trophies, regardless of whether it's a League Cup or a Premier League, maybe a Champions League. So surely he has to be even hungrier to get out of there now. And he struggled at times in the Euros, and people said maybe he needs to come out of the team, but he seemed to regather himself, his scoring touch. And look, there's times I watch him and I think, especially in the final, I know he scored his penalty in the shootout, but he's a strange kind of player in that he seems, you can never take him off. Whereas you look at Italy the other night, they took off some of their best players because Mancini said, they're done. Like they're tired. I need to get rid of them. Whereas Kane, in Tottenham's biggest game in recent history, the Champions League final against Liverpool, clearly wasn't fit. But the power he has on that team, Pochettino felt he had to play him. So he wasn't fit. And Liverpool fans, when they saw the team news coming in, were rubbing their hands at the prospect of a Harry Kane limping around. They knew this is in the bag. So, I think he needs to get out of there. I think just it has to be done quickly, because if it drags on for the summer, or for the rest of the summer before the season even starts. It just does nobody any favours. You have a new manager in there as well.
Okay, so you expect...
It's a bit of a rush to pick holes in him, isn't there? You know, even at the start of the tournament, he should be dropped, he should be taken off. It's Harry Kane. He's arguably the best striker in the world. His record in the Premier League over the last 7-8 years is unparalleled. Consistently top scorer in the Premier League last season, more assists than in the Premier League last season than anybody else. Every team should be desperate to try and get him. If it's 150 million, City need to go and pay it. The appointment of Nuno as manager, you can't see how that would entice Harry Kane to stay at Tottenham. It's not a big name coming in who's going to think, all right, maybe I will finally get that trophy at Tottenham. That is highly unlikely to happen with Nuno there. It's just, does Daniel Levy put the foot down? Does that add a complication? I think it's our first live game and off the ball is Spurs against Manchester City, that Daniel Levy, above all else, does not want Harry Kane playing in that match for Manchester City against Tottenham, which means maybe a deal can't go through till after the season started, and suddenly you've played 4 or 5 games and Harry Kane is still a Tottenham player and maybe you can somehow convince him to stay.
Okay, so what...
You could get a situation where Harry Kane scores for Tottenham against City but doesn't celebrate. The Wes Hoolahan against Villa. Do you remember that for Norwich?
And then it didn't happen.
No.
The great what if. What's going to happen? Who's Harry Kane playing for next season? At the end of the window?
I have a feeling he's going to still be at Spurs. Right. I just think Levy is going to price the move out. I could be wrong. Unless he gets players in exchange. I know we talked about exchange deals and there was a mention of Raheem Sterling. And Sterling,
His age is the biggest difficulty, isn't it?
Martial,
his age is the biggest difficulty for City. Like, he's going to be 28 by the time the season starts. 150 million for 28 is something behind the scenes at City there may be some nervousness about, even though I say you look at that record, he's the most influential player in the Premier League.
He can be good till he's 32. He could actually be good till he's 36 if he wants to be. It's not like his game is based on pace. So okay, so where's he going to be, Nathan, at the end of the transfer window? Who's he playing for?
Well, Tottenham.
Alright, two Spurs. We've literally a minute left. Owen, the question here is, how confident do you feel as an Arsenal fan heading into the new season?
Oh, massively. I think it is going to be a hugely successful season. I cannot wait to watch All or Nothing, the Arsenal edition. It is going to be
the
season of our lives. I am so buzzed that...
That's the end.
I'm looking forward to, like, Mikel Arteta, like, chatting shit about William Saliba or chatting shit to him on Zoom and... I don't know, Aubameyang and Lacazette.
Oh, well, there was great footage for it last night, wasn't there? Yeah. First game of the season for Arsenal, up against a Burnian, goalkeeping shocker, beaten by Hibs. Oh, yes.
This is like, I mean, this is trapdoor stuff. They've been flirting with the trapdoor for a while. Like, the fact that Aston Villa had the temerity to come along during the summer and say, yeah, we fancy getting Emile Smith Rowe. I'm like, the cheek of you, Villa. I mean, know your place. But then I'm like,
well, why wouldn't, if you're a Smith Rowe, you go, no, I can play with Jack Grealish every week. I can play with Jack Grealish. Maybe Jack Grealish stays if Smith Rowe comes. Like, imagine that talent.
Well, that's what I was just about
Villa
to say.
Club going, like, places.
That's what I was just about to say, yeah.
One way.
That was literally my point, but thank you for making it for me.
OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward. They're new and improved razors. My thanks to Phil and Nathan for being part of the first of the Deal or No Deal of the new season. The new Premier League season is officially here. You blinked and you missed the off-season. Don't worry, we've got you covered.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.